So I guess one of the ways that I want to begin is to say, hi, how are you? How you doing? How's it going? How do you do? What's up? What's happening? What's the story? What's your story? All those are forms of greeting. Likewise, very good. All those are forms of greeting, and it depends on how you know where you were raised, what section of the country, what year, what decade, what the culture was that you grew up in. There's a big difference between how do you do and hey, what's up, kind of thing. But it's all getting at the same thing, and that is, I know you, I'm interested in you, I care about you. So how are you doing? I mean, it's really a serious question behind our simple greetings. Or in other words, what is the latest chapter in your ongoing saga of life? What have you been up to? What are you doing? How are you doing? And we decide to share. And sometimes it's very simple. How you doing? Fine. Okay, that's it. But usually the conversation goes a little bit further. Now, actually, story is extremely old. I assume it began in caveman days. The caveman comes back and tells the wife what it was like chasing the wild boar, and she has stories to tell as to what it was like raising the kids in the cave or whatever. Story is probably the earliest form, the earliest reason that we desired to begin communicating with each other. We had an experience, and we wished to share it. Now, everybody actually wants to know what our story is. We go to the doctor, then the doctor says, well, when did these symptoms arise and what's been going on? Or what was the nature of the accident that put your body into this situation? You go to the lawyer wants to know your side of the story. That is your story, which becomes your side of the story because you know there's going to be another story, that side of the story that's going to come up when you sue somebody else. Everybody wants to know our story, and we all have every day a story to share with each other. Now, psychologists also tell us that actually in all of our conversations, we are always sharing our story. We're always opening up. We could be talking about sports, the latest movie, bird watching, the latest recipe, but our feelings, our opinions, how we understand things are going to come up in the conversation, either about the subject matter or life with each other. We're always telling our story. To take this another step further, psychologists also tell us that as we share our story, we often share unconsciously. We don't realize we're revealing as much about ourselves as we thought we were, but we are. And sometimes this happens even symbolically. If you'll remember, there was a woman by the name of Catherine Kubler-Ross, and she wrote a groundbreaking book called On Death and Dying. And it was in that book that she revealed the five stages of grief. That a person who has found out they have a debilitating disease and they are going to die. And we go through the same stages, that is, the loved ones surrounding that person also go through grief and go through these five different stages. I mention this because before she wrote the book, one of the big taboo subjects in public conversation or even private family conversations, we don't discuss death. We just didn't. And it was backed up by the medical community. You would have your favorite aunt in the hospital, and they would come along, and she was clearly dying. We can see that now. But the doctors would say, well, you know, there's still hope. We can still do some things. There's some other things we could try, and, you know, they could never come out and say, this is factually what is happening with your aunt. And consequently, we didn't have the tools of conversation to discuss that subject. So keeping that in mind, there was a story that occurred in this era before Catherine Kubler-Ross. A father and his son were in a hospital room. The father was in his mid-90s, and he was in the last stages of his life. And he looked out the window, and there across the way was the old factory. And the old factory was deteriorating and rusting, and they were going to have to tear it down. New kinds of automation were coming in, and they just couldn't bring it in. They were going to have to really tear down the entire thing and build a new one, or else maybe move somewhere else. And the father had been a laborer, and over the years had worked himself up and became a foreman and then became a supervisor, and I think eventually got into the personnel department. And he had devoted his life and his whole being was wrapped up in that factory and was very proud of the kinds of goods that they had produced and for the country. And now it's all coming to an end. And he's wondering, was it all worth it? Was it just, you know, a few passing decades and now that's it? And so he was talking about that, but the son could see symbolically what was going on. And I think by now you probably have seen it too from what I've told you. The father looks out and sees the factory, but the factory is a symbol of his life and his body. The factory is deteriorating and falling apart. They're going to have to tear it down. And his body no longer has the strength to hold life, and he will be passing away soon. But in those times, they can't talk about that sort of thing. It's not comfortable in families to discuss those things. But the son was younger and a bit more liberated and looked at the situation and reached out and touched his dad and said, Dad, from what you've told me, maybe now is a good time for us to discuss your passing. What we need to do so that it'll be easy. How would you want to be remembered? How can we design the funeral service? And his father turned to him and said, yes, thank you. Let's do that. So you see, even if we can't talk about certain things, we end up talking about them unconsciously or symbolically. Let's take this another step. I'm sure you've all read some of those novels, maybe back in high school, the Bronte sisters or Dickens, Thomas Hardy. And in those novels, you zoom in on a little English village. And you get introduced to these characters. There's the guy who owns the mill in town, and so he's very well-to-do. And he has a lovely daughter, and he wants that daughter to marry somebody that will be on the same socioeconomic level. And, you know, what's his name over there, the son of the banker? you should look to him. But she's got her eye on the son of the innkeeper, who is kind of a rogue. And what she doesn't know is that he's in cahoots with the pirates off the coast of Cornwall and smuggling rum and other kinds of booze into the village. And then there's this character, and then there's this character, and this character, and it all gets very entangled. And we're reading this, wondering what's going to happen in about, you know, chapter 30. All of a sudden, here come the troops. And they are conscripting young men for the British Navy or the Army because England is at war with France. Oh. So these young men get yanked out of the village. You know, the question is, well, what is village life going to be like now? Will these men ever return? If they return, will they be different? Will they be able to take up the old ways and the old romances and the nefarious stuff going off on the coast? The point of this is that the citizens of the village are also citizens of the country, and they forgot that. So when we ask the question, hey, how you doing? What's your story? Part of that is, what level of story are we talking about? We're all citizens of the Quad Cities. We're Illinoisans. We're Americans. And though we have our intertwined lives, supposedly in the next few months, we're all going to get hit with the consequences of tariffs being raised on China. We live at different levels of story, and all these levels impact us, and we impact each other as we tell our story. There's a final layer to this story. Now that you've gotten the picture that we're citizens and we have our own little soap operas going on, our own little human entanglements, and we suddenly realize, oh, we're also citizens of larger and larger communities, there is a final layer to our story. It's a story that we all belong to and we all participate in, and that is God's story. And God's story is a story of ongoing reconciliation and redemption of the world, of our lives. And every week, at this church at least, we are always invited. We are always reminded of that story, and we are invited to insert ourselves, deliberately be conscious and insert ourselves in that ongoing story of God. It's not that our little soap operas are not important. They are. All of our stories and our entanglements are very important. But we need to be delivered from the subplots of our story and deliberately insert ourselves into the world of ultimate meanings, where God is leading us to new life. As the psalmist put it, the earth is the Lord's, and all that is in it, the world, and all of us who live in it. Amen.